Hyvää huomenta, kaikille. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our second April seminar for the HEIST seminar team of the Finnish Institute for Educational Research here at the University of Jyväskylä. I'm pleased to welcome everyone here on this gorgeous spring morning. Had a little bit of rain overnight, and now it is beautiful and sunny. And so we are here today. We are the Higher Education Studies team of the Finnish Institute for Educational Research, and we are here today with an esteemed guest, Dr. Jussi Vallima, and he is here to share with us a book that he is working on called Educating the Nation, The Historical Development of Finnish Teacher Education. Dr. Jussi Vallima has worked at the university here for more than 40 years and is now an emeritus professor. Started working in the history department, worked in the administration, and then spent many decades here at the Finnish Institute for Educational Research. And he also now serves as the vice chair of the board of Tampere University. Without further ado, I will hand the podium over to Dr. Jussi Vallima.
Thank you, Mark. Mä aion tänään yrittää semmoista juttua, että mä puhun pääasiassa englanniksi, mutta kalvot on suomeksi, koska en tiedä, että mikä on tämä niin kuin sanka yleisö täällä ja netissä. So I will be speaking in English, but my slides are mainly in Finnish. Feel free to interrupt me anytime or challenge me, because my presentation is on the book that I've written, and it's 220 pages, and I'm pretty sure I cannot speak all of that in 1 hour or so. So I have a couple of starting points and perspectives for the presentation. The first one is an academic. The book I've written is a historical interpretation of the development of teacher education in Finland. It's based on a synthesis of an existing research literature, history, educational research, social research. My intellectual starting point is that there is a continuous interaction between education and society, which means that education is always part of society, and therefore the values and morals and norms influence on the contents of education, also the structures of education. But in the same time, education changes society. So it's not the one-way direction from society to education, or one-way direction from education to society, but it's an interaction. And I think I can show that in my presentation. Conceptually, I'm using the word folk school teachers seminariums, or the seminariums for the preparation of folk school teachers, instead of teachers college for preparing teachers for primary or elementary education. And why is that? One of the reasons is that in Finland we don't have a tradition of colleges. We have the tradition of universities. Another one is that seminarium describes the nature of these mainly boarding school-based educational establishments, and that the concept of seminario also comes from Germany, where the basic ideas for the seminarios came, and it also has been used in Nordic countries, which are the closest reference point for Finland. I also will be speaking about folk education and folk schools instead of public education. Why is that? In Finland, folk education has a double reference. It also means the education of the people and education of the nation. And in Finland especially, this combination of people and nation educating is a very, very strong one and important. And it's also, loaded term in politically and culturally. And then I will be speaking National Agency for Education, which is a modern term, because there have been a number of different names for that agency that takes the responsibility for funding and controlling the system of education. And it should be said that seminariums, teacher training seminars, were under this National Agency for Education as long as they existed, together with the fact that the basic education system was and is under that agency. Okay, so this is the book. It should be available June 9th. And it took 18 months to write it, and now 1 hour to speak about it. Life is unfair. My main focus or foci are in the history of folk school teachers education, and the reason is that it's the basis for the development of Finnish understanding of what is a teacher, the Finnish teacherhood, and also the development of profession of teaching in Finland. I will pay less attention to teacher education for secondary education, for gymnasiums or high schools in Anglo world, teaching of kindergarten, the training of teacher training of kindergarten teachers, special education teachers, and professional and vocational teachers training. I will pay attention main to the social institution of teacher training, meaning how they were organized, what was the relationship with society, and very much little pay attention to the pedagogical changes in these institutions. I'm not saying that the pedagogy was not changed, but I'm just saying that I'm not focusing on that. And here I have a couple of references to back up my choice. So I think that being a historian originally, I think that it's good to take a short look at where, what was the situation from which there was identified a need to develop teacher education in Finland. When Finland was part of the Swedish kingdom, that 700 years from the Middle Ages to the 1809, the education of the people, the folk education, was the responsibility of church and priests. In principle, the ability to read Bible in Finnish was in the core of the Lutheran religion. Because it was based on the idea that everybody should have a personal relationship with God by reading the Bible. In practice, however, this led to a situation where people only learned by heart the main points of the Lutheran Church, which was described in Catechism of Martin Luther. This was a problematic system, and the first problems were noted already in the 17th century. These problems could not be solved. One of the reasons was that priests really didn't want to be teachers. They wanted to be priests. And it was said in a decree in the 18th century that priests should not be suffering this obligation for more than 7 years in the beginning of the priest career as priests. So this was also officially noted, not just the feeling of priests. And one of the best attempts to improve the teacher education was made in the Academy of Turku, or Åbo Academy, in the beginning of the 19th century, when they established a pedagogical theological seminar that aimed for training teachers for the secondary schools, meaning gymnasi, lukio, gymnasium. But it died out because of lack of interest of the students and the lack of interest of the university. However, the situation of the folk education was quite widely debated in 1840s, 1850s, before Russian Empire stopped all public debates because of the censorship. So the main question there was, what should be taught, to whom it should be taught. Less was discussed who would be the teachers. But the opinions were that the liberal viewpoint was that people should be taught more than just reading and writing and religion, which was the perspective represented by the church, that this is all people need. It was said that there should be also taught mathematics, geography, history, and so on. And this was also very value-loaded discussion, because there were opinions by the upper members of society that if every maiden is taught reading and writing, so what would be they doing? They would be just reading trash novels and writing letters to their lovers instead of doing what the maidens should be doing. So it was a quite loaded discussion, but this discussion existed. So the situation, now I'm jumping back to the history, just to shortly to remind that Finland became part of the Russian Empire as an autonomous Grand Duchy as part of the Napoleon Wars in 1809. And this period of autonomy was very important for the development of the Finnish society in every aspect of the society. First one was that for the first time in history, Finland had its own government, imperial senate. And this helped to create an internal administration in Finland. It helped to create all the decision-making structures, all the decision implementation structures, meaning the central offices and boards. And So Finland was responsible for ruling and running the whole system of education from the primary schools to the universities, and this was also quite important. So Finland had an internal autonomy, but the supreme power was in the Russian emperor. So the relationship with the Russia was important, but Finland managed to develop its own economy, its own bank, its own currency. Industrialization began little by little, and what was important for the function of education of society was that the population grew from less than 1 million to almost 3 million. So there was an increasing population living mainly in the countryside who were not taught properly. Well, of course, this was not an absolute time of paradise because of the Russian rule. But anyway, it really enabled the development of Finnish society. When we look at the education, Finland from the education of from the context of education, Finland was really a backwater in folk education in Europe. Todellinen takapajula, umpiperä, syrjäinen provinssi, you name it. And so Finland was really one of the few remaining countries in the 1850s, 1860s, where the teaching was still in the responsible of the church. There was a number of different kind of schools in countryside. I mained most of them. What was common to all of them was that the level of education was very different. There were some good schools, but most often the education was poor. And that was because the teaching was not seen as a profession or vocation. It was something like where people have teachers have drifted into being to teachers. So they were students who had failed from the university. They were this mamsel, which is unmarried nobility woman, ex-soldiers, what a good training for a teacher, priests and lower priests. Compared to all the other Nordic countries, there were folk schools in all the other Nordic countries before Finland. And even the training of teachers, folk schools teachers, was organized in Germany from the mid 19th century, in Denmark, Norway, and in Sweden. Quite early in this regard. When I'm speaking about this education of the people, this is mainly about the education of the people living in the countryside, because there was the majority of the people living in the countryside. In the towns in Finland, there was a kind of educational system where they have a trivial school, pedagogios, and a gymnasium. But that was only for the very small part of the population. I also should say that the training of the secondary teachers, that was organized well enough in terms of the 19th century criteria, because the first professorship in education, in pedagogy, was established in 1852 in the University of Helsinki, and that professor was responsible for organizing the pedagogical training of the university graduates. And they also established practicing schools called normal schools, first for Swedish speakers, then for Finnish speaking speakers, meaning boys, of course, And later also for these normal schools for girls. But that system, which actually was created in 1860s, lasted till 1970s without, well, minor adjustments. So this is how it was described in Finnish novel Seven Brothers by Alexis Kivi, this picture is from a film from the 1930s describing when these seven brothers were teaching by this Lukkari, I don't know, remember the name in English, but the lower priest, and actually not by the lower priest, but by his daughter, who was teaching these adult men. And it's no big surprise that their career in education was quite a short one. So they escaped from the classroom through the window and escaped to a forest. But the teaching method, you can see here, one of the crucial teaching devices was this stick in the hand of the young girl. Okay, so this is to give a glimpse to what it could mean in practice before we had these folk schools. What was a very fortunate thing for Finland was that Russia lost the Crimean War in 1850s, because that forced Russian society to change, and this also influenced Finland, because the Emperor Alexander II came to Finland and gave a declaration that the education of the people should be improved. So, the Senate nominated Uno Syngnaeus, a priest and a teacher, to write a proposal on how to reform the education of the people, and how to organize the training of the teachers, and this led to the establishment of a declaration given by the emperor and made as a decree and law by the Finnish Senate. The main ideas of Syngnaeus were, first he suggested that there should be schools for both boys and girls, and kindergarten for children who were younger than the school age children. He emphasized different subjects, knowledge, like history, mathematics, geography, mother tongue, the subjects improving skills, handicrafts, gymnastics, sports, and calligraphy, and also the subjects influencing the worldview, or how to say it. In that time, it was religion and church history. And I find it quite interesting that the same combination we can find still in the Finnish schools. It's skills, knowledge, and worldview. What was also quite radical for the ideas of Syngnaeus was that he thought said that school should both teach and educate. And this was debated in society. I will speak about it a bit later. He also suggested that there should be established seminars for preparing folk school teachers. This meant a four-year seminar, both for the women and men. These seminars were boarding schools, so they had these dormitories where students, or the majority of students, were living. There was established a kindergarten in the first three seminariums. The basic ethos of the seminariums was very strong Christian patriotic ethos, and they also started developed the idea of being a teacher is a vocation. And teachers should be exemplary citizens for the whole nation. These ideas were debated, and there was a debate between J.V. Snellman, who was a professor and senator and philosopher, a very influential person at that time, and Cygnaeus. And they debated the following topics. Should the school provide knowledge and skills or not? Snellman was thinking that, based on this Hegelian philosophy, that the education of the children should be the responsibility of the home. And school should only provide skills, and should only provide knowledge. Whereas Cygnaeus was thinking that every pupil is an image of God, and therefore it is different, and they should be taught not only knowledge but skills, and school should also educate the pupils. Another topic was the kindergarten, because Snellman saw that kindergartens are really ruining the families. And because families were the basic unit of society, it will be very harmful for the development of society. So there should not be any kindergartens, and not in the seminars. Whereas Cygnaeus saw that girls should be taught skills how to be a mother. Child death rate was very high in Finland, about 20% at that time. And one of the real reasons for that was the lacking of knowledge how to deal with small children. Educating the girls was also debated, because according to Snellman, the family was a basic unit of society, and there man represented rational, outward, society-oriented force. Mother was the genius of the heart, so her responsibility was for home. And so educating girls was not seen, according to Snellman, necessary. Whereas Snellman, whereas Cygnaeus saw it very differently. What was really radical in the suggestion by Cygnaeus was that he was suggesting that the folk school should be a basic school for every class of society. So actually a comprehensive school, peruskoulu. And that was really radical at the time when Finland was an estate-based society with four estates, and every estate had its own role in society. And this was so radical that it was not accepted. It took 100 years to implement this idea. Snellman also resisted strongly the idea that this full school preparation seminariums should be this joint seminariums for both men and women, because according to Snellman, that would lead to continuous need to control the men and women in the seminariums night and day. And, well, I think he was not totally wrong. But anyway, his idea was that because of that, there will be no free time for students in the seminariums to have their own time to educate themselves. Whereas Signeus saw that it was really important that the teachers should be both men and women. Okay, so as you can see, these kind of things were debated, and when the first seminarium was established here in Jyväskylä, 1863, it was something, some kind of radical new social institution in Finnish society. I will not go into the details of establishing all the seminariums. I just pick up the common features of the establishment and operation of all the seminariums. When a new seminarium was established, the first discussion or debate in society was where it should be located. And it was normal that many small towns were fighting to get the seminarium, because it was expected and later known that it really refreshed the cultural life, economic life, political life in these towns. Why I say that many small towns were fighting for them was that according to Signeus, the seminarium should be located in small towns, because there could be the lighthouses of culture. Point one. Point two is that he thought that it would be much easier for the peasants to send their sons to a smaller town than to big town of Helsinki, for example, where there were much more temptations for the young men and women. So it's coincidence that all the seminaries were located in small towns. The process went so that Senate made a suggestion to the emperor that there should be established a seminarium or seminariums, and then emperor accepted it and gave a declaration, and then Senate made all the practical decisions, practically voting which will be the town where to put it. For example, when the seminarium was established in Jyväskylä, there was some 842 people living in this town. And when we know that about there was the annual intake of students to Jyväskylä was 72 students, 50% men and women, and there was some 20 teachers and in the seminarium. And when you calculate this 72 by 4, you see that in the beginning of the 1860s, the seminarium increased the population of Jyväskylä by 50%. So, and the same kind of story is more or less repeated in all the small towns. That, yeah, Terhi.
Thanks, Jussi. You told us to interrupt you if we had something in between, so I'm going to jump to that. Maybe you will come to this later on, but I was really hoping you might be able to kind of say something about this sort of cultural impact, or what was the impact really of the of these seminars in these smaller towns? And this question comes from the context of the work that we did around cultural contributions of higher education, of which, of course, this was in a way an early form in a Finnish context. So I hope you'll get to kind of, you know, say a few words about that at some point.
Well, I will try to do it immediately because, well, we know that that from Jyväskylä, from Kajaani, these are the good examples, Sortavala also, so that the lecturers in the seminarium, they were very active in cultural life in Finland. They contributed to the local newspaper. They were active in cultural life also by starting a different kind of course or sports activities. Sports associations. The teachers trained in the seminariums, they were engaged in different kind of cultural activities, these sports activities, economic activities, and also the So the seminar lecturers also took part in the political life, so that they were acting as the members of the city councils or the chairs of the city councils. So they really engaged in the society. And then the teachers, when they went back to their home villages, they did the same. There is a study by Jussi Isosaari on how many students from the Sortavala seminar were engaged in what, and it's really impressive. Yes. So the second question that was discussed was the nature of the seminarium. Should it be a joint seminar for men and women, or either men or female seminar? Two of the first seminars, Jyväskylä and Sortavala, were joint seminariums. All the others were either or. It's also important that this National Agency for Education, they funded all the buildings that were built for every seminarium in each town. And this included the teaching facilities of the seminariums, the practicing training schools, originally called as model schools, dormitories, building for handicrafts, and facilities for gardening, sauna, of course, and that was actually built quite soon, and also the houses for directors. I found it quite interesting that in the men's seminariums there was one director, but in the women's seminariums there was a director of the women's director of the seminarium and the men director of the seminarium. So there must have been some rationale for that. Anyway, National Agency for Education also funded the teaching devices, teacher salaries, and also it controlled the functioning of seminariums, like it controlled the functioning of schools. So they visited every seminarium every second year. And in Jyväskylä, they developed the practices, the teaching practices. One of the important ones was that every teacher candidate or teacher training, he needed to practice in the training school. And he needed to prepare the lessons. All the lessons were followed by the lecturers of the seminarium and the fellow students. And all the lecturers also gave the feedback on how they were succeeding. So this kind of model was moved to other seminariums and actually to all teacher training in Finland. Well, I don't think this is unique Finnish, but this is how it started here. Well, of course, this came from Germany, because the model was from Germany and Switzerland. It was also important that the lecturers, especially in Jyväskylä, they made the course books or books for seminariums and for the folk schools. And so Jyväskylä was the first one, but it was also the forerunner. And because of that position, it really shaped the field of seminariums in Finland. Both in practical terms, because of the books and the models they have developed, but also through the exchange of teachers from Jyväskylä to other seminariums, and also that the former students of Jyväskylä, they went to become teachers in other seminariums and practice schools. So they were, if we follow the ideas of new institutional theory, they had many ways influence on the nature of the field. Here, I think I just show this to show how many different subjects there were in seminar taught for the future teachers. I just run through them. First one on religion and church history, then psychology, ethics, educational sciences, didactics, school management, mother tongue, history and social studies, geography, economic geography, natural history and evolution, agriculture and horticulture, chemistry and physics, mathematics, accounting, health and temperance, gymnastics and sport, singing and music, singing together, calligraphy, drawing, crafts. For men it was 6 hours, for women it was 4 hours. So the total number of teaching hours per week, 6 day week, was 39 hours for men and 37 for women. And in addition, they had their own students had their own assignments, and they also were active in different kind of associations organized by the comradeship that was established in every school. So there was temperance, sports, singing, bands, chorus, theatrical plays, and then things like that. So I think the weeks were quite loaded, teaching started, the students were woke up at 5 and they went to bed at 10. And in between they needed to also eat somewhere. So there was not too much free time for students. In addition, in the seminariums, there was a quite strong social control by the lecturers. So the argument supporting this was that this was this kind of isällistä huolenpitoa, Terri, kuinka? This kind of a family taking care of the students, which helped local parentis. In loco parentis, yeah. So it was so that this helped the students to develop their own the discipline in their own life. And as I said, there were practicing schools for in every seminarium. So it was either for boys or for girls, in like in Jyväskylä and in Suurtavala, but in seminariums where there was in these single-sex seminariums, they could also accept both genders to this practice school. And one of the reasons was that for example, in Jyväskylä and Heinola, Kajani, this folk school was the first one in the city. In Jyväskylä, it was something took like 20 years, the first and only folk school. This was also one of the cultural impact of the seminariums. So when we look at what was the importance of the candles of the people or the folk school teachers. First, some numbers. The number of folk schools started to grow in 1870s, and then there was a district decree given in 1898, which said that in every village, if there is more than 50 pupils, there must be established a school. And all the establishment of schools in countryside was supported by the Senate, by the state, but establishing schools was not an easy job, because there were normally quite strong resistance against this useless activity that takes children away from productive work in the farms. So it was slowly growing. In the same time, when they were established folk schools, the church continued to organize its own circulating schools, which means that there was a teacher who moved from one village to another, giving a basic education, teaching reading and religion. And these circular schools were much more popular at the turn of the 19th century than the folk schools. So, and church was, this was the way of church trying to keep the control of the system of, or the primary education. This district decree increased the number of schools, and this created need for new seminars and teachers. Compulsory Education Act in the Republic of Finland in 1921, it also did the same, that it increased the number of schools and need for teachers and more education of teachers. I here mention shortly the spirit of the seminarin henki, which was used to describe the nationalistic, patriotic, and Christian ethos of the seminarium. So this was from the very very beginning. It was defined as a very positive thing up to 1960s, when it turned out to be describing all that was obsolete, outdated, Hippocratic. So I think that's quite interesting turn in the mentality of society. And as I said, that there was a strong ideal that teachers are exemplary citizens. They are healthy, they are socially active, multi-talented, knowledgeable, ethically and morally strong citizens. Because they were expected to act as moral citizens in the villages where they went back. And then when we look at from another perspective, the role of folk school teachers in Finland, I think it's fair to say that they had a strong impact on the development of civic society in Finland. Because they thought that the basic skills needed for citizens in civic society, basics of society, reading, writing, mathematics, history, geography, etc. They clearly strengthened the nationalism in Finland. Because of the training that they had in seminariums, Finland as a nation was being formated or created in the 19th century, and I think that the teachers were really modernization agents in that regard. We quite often see what happened in the University of Helsinki or Alexander University, where they developed these nationalistic ideas and in the party politics of the Fennomas, etc. But who were the people who really went to the people and gave this interpretation of Finland as a nation? I think it's fair to say that the teachers were very important that. So they were actors in modernizing Finnish society. Not the only ones, of course, but because of the many activities they did in the local communities, they were starting banking, for example, engaged in business, engaged in different societies, associations, church. You name it. It's very hard to say what were they not engaged in. So this is where I show the teacher seminariums established by the 1918. So when Finland was part of the Russian Empire. As you can see, the seminarium cities were located in small towns, Jyväskylä, Sortavala, Tammisaari, Raahe, Uusikaupunki, Rauma, Heinola, Kajaani, and Kolppana. Kolppana is an interesting story because it's not actually a Finnish. It was established in Inkerimaa, in Ingria, some 50 kilometers south from St. Petersburg. It started same year as Jyväskylä Seminarium. It was a three-year seminar for men who became priests and teachers in this Finnish-speaking region in the Russia that was not part of Finland. Well, it worked until the First World War, and in the Soviet time it was transferred in a technicum and then closed down. So we should know more about it. I also will pay attention to this lower folk school teacher seminariums that started to work in late 19th century. And also this kindergarten teacher seminarium that started in Helsinki in 1896. Okay, but here is the picture. And then shortly about the different seminariums. more like the pictures of them. Sortavala Seminarium was established in Porto Carilia, and it was one of the most important seminariums, because it was training teachers for the Porto Carilia. The aim was to Finnish-size the population that was Orthodox Karelian speaking, against being Russified, to fight against the Eastern danger. It had a very strong patriotic Christian ethos, which is sometimes called Kymmelän henki, the spirit of Kymmelä, because it was located in Kymmelä area in Sortavala. And because of all of that, it was very strong. The Russian authorities tried to close it down quite many times in 1890s and early 20th century. And that's part of the measures to homogenize Finland into the rest of the Russian Empire, so the called oppression years. They made Russian language obligatory in this seminarium, first in Sortavala and then in other seminariums, and this extended the study years from 4 to 5. And this was the only this joint seminar together with Jyväskylä. This 5-year extension of the study time was continued in when Finland became independent. And when I showed you the number of teaching per week, I think it's quite understandable that it was really loaded. So and then Tammisaari women's seminarium. It was common that in the same time when they was established a new seminarium, they decided to decide a women's seminarium and men's seminarium. So in Tammisaari in Ekenäs, women's seminarium was established the same year as in Uusikarleby. And these were the only Swedish speaking seminariums, or Swedish language seminarium. What comes from this picture is that quite often these seminarium buildings were located in a quite, well, this is visible, influential place, like in Uusikarleby. So here you can see in the bigger picture is the main building of the director, and then behind it the main building of the seminarium. These are still used in Uusikarleby. Rahe Women's Seminarium, here you can see in the lower picture is the practicing school that was opposite to the main building, about 400 meters, and it's still used as a school. On the upper picture you can see the parts of the main building and the female director's home or house beside it. The male director's building was also in the same campus area. So the idea that these were campus, so that were the practicing school and the main buildings and the director's buildings and other buildings were close to each other. And normally were the areas where they were built were donated by the city. Well, this was nothing special, because every city donated an area to get the seminarium. Rauma Men's Seminarium is still working in the teacher training is still working here in the same placed in buildings. And interesting with Rauma is that the social background of the students was lower than in other seminariums. It was typical that that in the 19th century, the male students they come from countryside, from peasant families, wealthy peasant families, and the women students they came from towns, and they were from middle class bourgeois families. And this was especially case in the 19th century because university was closed from women students up to 1880s practically. So these two populations and it more or less stayed the same till the beginning of 20th century. But then it became more that kind of difference was no longer so big. And Rauma was also interesting because this was the only men seminar that was in the Red area during the Finnish Civil War. And it even happened that six of the students went to Helsinki, to the Red Helsinki, to be teachers. Jukka Rantala has written about this. And after the Civil War was lost or won, depending on the perspective, when the whites won the Civil War, all the students were expelled from the seminarium, of course, because they had shown their loyalty to the red side. Actually, five of them were taken back to other seminarios after that. Actually, there were some students from practically every seminar, not Kajaani, but many seminars who were Reds, but they were ignored, of course, because it didn't fit in the Christian patriotic ethos of the seminariums. Heinola Women's Seminarium, this was not a boarding school, but students living in the city, and the same was also in Rauma, Rauma Seminarium. And in Heinola, what I found quite interesting is that they established a cooperation to run the student restaurant. So during their studies, students not only get familiar with cultural activities, but these kind of economic activities. So they brought this experience with them when they went to work. Sirka Salonen is an interesting case. She was a student of the Heinola Seminarium, and she didn't ask permission to take part in the Miss Finland competition. And he won that. It was some 1938. And later he won the Miss Europe title. And naturally, the teaching staff of Heinola Seminarium expelled her, because they thought that this is not a proper behavior for a future teacher. However, the director of the seminarium was against that expel, and so it went to the National Agency for Education, and this said that it was wrong. She should be taken back as a student. So, and even in this periodical, Suom Kuvalehti went to make a story of that. That all the people in the Heinola town were for Sirka Salonen, but these female lecturers in the seminarium were of opposite opinion. Anyway, but this describes I think that it describes the mentality of teacher training seminariums in the 1930s. It was there was a clear norm what a teacher should be and should not be. Uh, Kajani Men Seminarium, well, this was bombed by the Russians in the Second World War, but the only original remaining building is that where you may see käsityöt, so handicraft. So in every seminarium there was a building for handicraft. Yeah, so it's also here. Then more about the other teacher training in Finland than just seminariums. By the end of the 19th century, in Finnish society, they begin to recognize different groups of people who also should be incorporated in the teaching, and these included small children. So the kindergartens were established. Children who were under the full school age, and so they were started lower full schools. People with sensory disabilities, blind, deaf, and with mental problems. And also there was noted a need for vocational education, and all of these schools, they started as private schools. Gradually they were recognized by the state authorities, and after that shorter or longer period, state started to support and control them. So this was the process together of what was common to all of them. Then something about the beginning of lower full school teacher seminariums. When full school degree was given, it was thought that pupils could read somehow, and that they would have been taught at their homes. Well, this was not the case, and it was found out quite soon. So they established these lower folk schools for younger children, but only in cities, only in towns. Not in the countryside. And with the schools emerged need to train teachers, and this training was it was a kind of mess in the 19th century. So there was full school teachers who trained students to become lower full school teachers. There was some kind of schools for them in different parts of Finland, for example in the Äänekoski, Kuortane, other parts of Finland, with no historical documents remaining from them. More organized way was that to start to organize this lower full school teacher training in Sortavala Seminarium to fight against this eastern danger. And the most important private lower full school seminars were established in Hämeenlinna. There was Karl Verkko who established a seminar in Helsinki. Then there was established a Swedish-speaking small school seminarium in Helsinki, and Österbotten Svenska small school seminarium in Vaasa. So these kind of things happened before Finland got independent. Then with the Finnish independence, this lower full school teacher training was also more organized. The establishment of special education schools was, again, Finland was lagging behind other countries. Teachers in these schools were mainly daughters of estates, so bourgeois nobility. And because we know that more than 50% of the students were in schools for blinds were from these upper society classes of society, and the remaining one were for school teachers and others. The situation for this special education improved somewhat in 1920s when there were established auxiliary schools together with this compulsory education act, but it was said that they needed to be established only in towns. And in towns, about 12% of the people, Finns, lived in towns. No auxiliary schools in countryside. Teachers were mainly for school teachers. So it took, well, quite some time, because the special education teacher training started in Jyväskylä only in 1959. And in 1970s, it moved to universities and to other universities. The beginning of kindergarten teachers started with the establishment of kindergartens, and then there was started the first Swedish-speaking kindergarten teacher training in 1892, and the Finnish speaking 10 years later about. But this was very modest. They trained something like 10 teachers a year. But also the need for kindergarten teachers was not very big, because there were very few kindergartens in Finland. The situation changed totally after the Second World War. With the speeding industrialization of Finland, women going to work, so the need really exploded in 1960s. And it was interesting that these kindergarten teacher seminars were established as private institutions. First in Helsinki, in this Ebenezer, and in Jyväskylä it was it was run by Ebenezer, but also these seminaries in Tampere, Pietarsaari and Oulu. And only in 1970s they were taken into universities, but it took another 20 years before the kindergarten teacher curriculum for kindergarten teachers was united with educational sciences. The teaching of vocational schools, school teachers, the very same kind of story. The teacher training started as courses first in Helsinki Crafts Teachers College and Businessmen's Trade College. And this was very mixed field because of the nature of the vocational because of the nature of business and industry. The needs are very different, starting from seafare to health to nursing to business to crafts to industry. Typical was that different kind of associations and business and industrial plants, they started their own vocational schools, and some kind of vocational teacher training, but not actually before the 1950s. So the first ones were in Hämeenlinna and Jyväskylä, and after different developments, they are now part of the universities of applied sciences as teacher training colleges. Well, I think I skip that. I just say that in the White Finland, when Finland became independent, nothing much happened in the seminariums. The curriculum I showed you was describing this period. So, and what also happened was that these lower Volksschule seminariums, they were taken, well, they were valtiollistettiin, so they were made part of the state institutions. The most important happening in the 1920s and 30s was the establishment of the Jyväskylä College of Education, and this was the first one in Nordic countries, and it was meant for matriculated students. And here what happened was that the Jyväskylä Seminarium was transferred into Jyväskylä College of Education. The part of the lecturers were made professors. They elected a rector, so it became part of the system of higher education with similar structures to technical college in Helsinki. And this also solved the problem that existed, that Volksschule teachers, they had no way to proceed in the system of education because it was not recognized as a higher education degree. This opened way for the academic careers. The most radical changes in the teachers' education took place after the Second World War. This was partly because the world has changed, and white Finland had lost its credibility. The building of the Nordic welfare state, and instead of the values of home, religion, fatherland, that described the white Finland, equality became the core value. After the Second War, immediately there was a real bad need for teachers, so the different kind of special arrangements were organized, short courses for teachers. But there was also established three contemporary teacher colleges in Helsinki, Turku and Oulu. They were incorporated into the universities in 1970s, when all of the teacher education was moved to universities. What also happened was that two lower Volksschule seminariums in Hämeenlinna and Tornio were made Volksschule teacher seminariums. Then there was established a seminarium in Savonlinna for women and a joint seminar in Kemijärvi. This also worked from 1950s to 1970s. As for the seminariums, the Seminarium Act that was given in 1860s, it was reformed in 1958, but according to Veli Nurmi, students or lecturers in the seminarium barely saw any changes. So the 1960s was a period of transition for teacher education in Finland. It became evident that teacher training seminars were not functioning well enough, but nobody knew what would happen. The establishment of comprehensive schools, peruskoulu, made it clear that seminariums cannot continue as teacher training units. They needed to be that teacher training needed to be transferred to universities. So that's what happened. All the seminariums were discontinued. Teacher training was moved to universities 1974, from after 1979, all the teachers in Finland have been masters of education or other masters. So why seminariums were discontinued? Lyhyt vastaus on, että maailma muuttui, mutta seminaarit ei. The world changed, but seminariums did not. This does not mean that seminariums were not trying to change. They were trying to change for there were different committees suggesting changes, but none of them were implemented. So the explanations were, these are, I follow Urho Somerkivi. First one was that seminariums were small institutions. So the student intake was 36, about 40 to single-sex seminariums and about 80 to joint seminariums. So they were economically quite inefficient. The second one is that the status of teachers was changing. Teachers were not anymore defined as knowing everything and being in the clearly in the middle class or in the being the civilized, the most civilized people in their local communities. So this also required changes in the profession of teachers. There was a close supervision by the National Agency for Education, and together with the lack of funding, that really prevented pedagogical renewing or changes in seminariums. So teaching had become pedagogically outdated. There were no longer course books for seminariums, but they were using the course books for lukio, for the secondary education. So it was also outdated in the way that it was not connected to scientific production of knowledge. Qualifications for seminarium lecturers were quite low. It used to be that you needed to have a master's degree in university to become a seminarium lecturer in the 19th century. But by the 1960s, majority of the lecturers were former students of seminariums. So they didn't have a higher education degree. And it was also defined that the moral ethos of seminariums, the seminarian hengi, was defined as hypocrite, outdated, semi-scientific. So, seminariums were closed down and teacher education was moved to universities. And this, of course, was criticized because part of the old school pedagogies thought that this university education was too far from the practice and from the practice of the teachers' work, so they should be more practical training, which was one of the strengths of the seminarium education, that they had a good training in schools. So I think that that the seminariums, however, left quite strong mark in the Finnish understanding of what is it to become a teacher or be a teacher. I think that the starting point is that the seminariums gave a very strong moral and ethical basis for teachers to educate the nation. Whether you like this ethos or not, but it's a fact that it gave a moral backbone for teachers in their work. And this makes me question what is the moral backbone that is nowadays given to teachers in their teaching work. The impact was also through the fact that folk school teachers, they had a qualification to teach in lower folk schools, special education, vocational schools, and practically everywhere where teachers were needed. So the ways of thinking of seminariums spread quite widely in the Finnish society and in the Finnish teachers. The idea of a good teacher was, or maybe it is, still of an exemplary citizen who is socially active, healthy, morally and ethically solid, multi-skilled, who manages the classroom events and knows everything. I think that these are quite hard things to learn from, learn out of. And this also gave the strong sense of teaching as a profession, which is based on vocation. How is it defined today? Are teachers just experts of learning and teaching? Well, this is my final slide, finally. I think that when we think about what can be learned from the reforms of education, I have not gone into the details, but you will find them in the book. But it seems that every time when there is a reform of education in 1860s, 1920s, 1960s, is that they both try to solve the problems that are currently here, and politically look important. But they also try to create an understanding of what is the society of the future that is built with the help of the education. I think these permanent questions are often, what is the responsibility of home, school, society? Who is responsible for what? It's also discussed what should be taught. What is the contents and the subjects. The third difficult question is, who will be teacher? Who will teach? What are the qualifications needed for teachers? And how to teach. My educational scientist colleagues can fight a year about this topic. The final question is, who pays? Thank you.
Thank you so very much. That was fascinating. And we are fairly short on time, but want to see if anyone has any questions for Dr. Vadnigma while he is here. So any questions there? If you're online, feel free to type a question in the chat as well. Daddy.
Thank you. So this was really interesting. A lot of it was known, of course, but there were really new things that I didn't know about and had never thought about. One thing, you kind of started answering it yourself there or raised as a question, but I was wondering if you'd like to kind of reflect a little bit further on the extent to which this old ideas or ideation or image about what is the role of the teacher, the moral expectations of a teacher, or this idea that they are somehow, as you said, candles for the people. How much do they live on still in our understanding about what is the role of the school versus what is the role of the family, for example, in teaching, in educating children, in solving our various societal problems? Because as a layperson, not as a scholar, maybe, but as a layperson, I would say that I still recognize that ideation. Maybe those who are actually, you know, scholars of teacher education would disagree, but somehow I think that in the sort of popular discourse, there is still that element. Or maybe I've just watched too many old movies.
I reflect on your question. Well, this is one of the things I have been thinking quite a lot, and I think that the strength of history is maybe in that it helps you to ask these questions. My experience from the teaching profession is that when I have acted in APO training, in adult education training for many years. And what was really the topic there was that what is my way of being a teacher? And that would not be a topic if we had a way of thinking of a teacher that is shared, that comes from the past, that exists. And I think that also there is not direct evidence from this question, from the pedagogical fashions that we have had, thinking about teacher as a coach, not as a what is this authority in the class. Different kind of way working together with other teachers. So these make sense when we have a model that we don't accept anymore. And I think that this, the strength of the, I think I would like to use Anthony Giddens' idea of structure. That being a teacher in a traditional way is kind of structure. When a way of doing is repeated many times again, it becomes a structure. And if you want to break the structure, you should know that it is a structure, and then you should know what is better than the structure.
Okay, thank you for your presentation. Well, coming back to that one slide where you have these opposite opinions of Snellman and Juniors about the role of society, or if we'll, should it be knowledge or competencies? Is the responsibility of home or school? Are kindergartens destroying them? Things like that. So looking at the last slide you have, are we back in the same question once again? Have we gone anywhere from that discussion of Jungners and Snellman, or do we always come back to the same question?
Well, I could say that history don't repeat itself, but historians do. But that's not a good answer. I think that these are the basic questions, and these are the basic questions that we need to ask. Because we still have families, we still have schools, we still have society. So these actors have not vanished; they exist. But what is their relationship in education? This is a problem, I think, for every generation. But I think maybe it helps to understand that this is not unique to our time, but this is permanent.
My apologies first for coming in late. We've had an Orcourt Al event as well, but I hope the slides are available from this because it sounds super interesting and very important. And apologies if you've then addressed this already. I was thinking about the comment about somehow the moral responsibilities of being a teacher and how we kind of frame that nowadays. And it seems to me that we have somehow, on the one hand, an emphasis on the ethical, the moral responsibilities of a teacher, or then we go to another extreme and somehow put those out of the picture. But I was wondering whether the idea that we actually have educational responsibility, somehow that places teachers in a different position. That it's not that the teachers are a candle and a light for how to be, like I'm a model for how the next generation should be, but somehow recognise the responsibility, drawing on Hannah Arendt about the idea of we have a responsibility of how we bring newcomers into the world, of how we share with them what we already know about the world and the kind of world we've created, but then also create a space for them to, for the new generation to decide how to be in the world for themselves. And I think my question is going towards whether you think that as educators we really have a sense of what we're doing in education today, or how do we frame that sort of educational basis for the work that we do in education?
Well, these are the the questions I have been asking while writing this book. And unfortunately, I don't have a good answer. I hope to have good questions, because I think it's really, when you think about the hard work of teachers, if you have no ethical basis, if you have no ethical basis on what is important for a human being, for society, it's very difficult to teach anything. It's if you don't have this moral or ethical basis, it's just technical. And I think in the Finnish tradition, being a technical teacher is not a something desirable.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I don't see any questions online, and I think we are out of our time here today. So once again, thank you so very much for a fascinating presentation, and I incredibly look forward to the book. You said June 9th?
June 9th,
yes. Every bookstore will be in the front window.
Of course.
So once again, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Very much appreciate it, and thank you to everyone who joined us online, and have a great rest of your day, and a most excellent Vappu.
Yeah. Thank you.